Working Cows Podcast, Episode 83.
Welcome to the podcast that gives producers a platform to discuss and share paradigm-challenging practices. Practices that have increased the effectiveness of their operation and the joy that their families have received from this lifestyle.
Howdy, everybody. It's Clay Connery, host of the Working Cows Podcast, brought to you by the Global Ag Network. And we've got a special episode for you today. Kelly Sidorek is a holistic management educator up in Canada. She reached out to me and said that she would like to talk a little bit about some of her perspective on the issue of succession planning. And I'm always all in to talk about that because it's such a huge issue facing so many ranches and so many people in our industry. I was happy to give Kelly a platform to share some of what she's learned as she has been educating families and businesses and ranches about how to handle the issue of passing on the assets and the management responsibility from one generation to the next. This episode is episode 83, so workingcows.net/83 is the show notes page for today. So, Kelly, thank you for joining me today on the Working Cows Podcast.
Thank you very much for having me. I've been a long-time follower, listener, so I'm, pretty excited about the opportunity.
Well, I appreciate you reaching out to me and kind of sharing with me a little bit of your history as a holistic management instructor and specifically wanting to focus on this issue of succession planning, the management, succession, asset transition, and some of those things. So could we just start out by talking about some of the typical barriers that you see to those issues of management, succession, and asset transition?
Well, you know, there's a number of different factors. Of course, it would be similar, I'm sure, in the United States to what we've seen here in Canada, is that in the last 20 years, the asset value for agricultural land in particular has really, really increased. So now families are presented with these challenges of you know, what can be large net worth, perhaps not the same cash flow, and just trying to figure out how that's best going to work. I think one of the ideas that sometimes gets in the way that people have is, you know, that it needs to be equal. And there's a number of people that talk about it in this field that say, you know, equitable and fair are not necessarily, or equal and fair are not necessarily the same thing. And so keeping that in mind, I think one of the, you know, a big barrier is really just about the thought of change. And I think human natures were somewhat adverse to that. But as you and all the listeners will know, that is a fact of life these days. And thinking that, you know, sometimes people do not want to talk about that worst case scenario or what life is like without mom or dad sitting at the table or, you know, at the head of the operation. Certainly another piece that enters it along that same idea of change and transition is for the senior generation or the founders to try to envision what they would do next. So many of them, you know, typically for that generation have put, you know, literally heart, soul, blood, sweat, and tears and all into the operation and perhaps don't have a lot of other interests, activities beyond. So it's really a daunting task to think about if they're going to step away, you know, figuratively and physically, what is that going to look like? Sure. And what are they going to be doing? So, you know, I think that's something, you know, and certainly another one, Clay, is that my good friend and mentor David Irvine talks about this. You know, in agriculture, we are really good at producing. You know, there's all different kinds of models for that. And but one of the things that we haven't done a lot is working on the people side of things, which, of course, in holistic management, we talk about that as well as the land, livestock, and finances. and that it's just an area that we don't have much experience with and familiarity. So he says it's a muscle that we've got to start using and strength, and just the communication piece about talking about some of the issues.
Yeah, very good. You know, I just in the last couple of days, really, one close friend of mine was, you know, remembering his father's untimely passing, and, you know, in a totally unexpected way, just out of the blue one day. And then another guy I was just talking to, you know, said that they're going through that too, and their situations are kind of different, I think, from what I can tell from the outside looking in, that it caused a lot of turmoil in one situation as far as stress on the family relationships, apart from, you know, the emotional turmoil and some of those things. And so when you have those situations where the unexpected has happened, a worst case scenario, you don't have anything in place, that's a pretty vulnerable position to be in.
It truly is. And that's also one of the worst possible times to have strategic, operational, big picture discussions.
Sure. So how would you suggest that somebody gets started on the process, tackling these barriers, being proactive? What's the first step that you would suggest a family starts with?
Well, I do have a bit of a bias, and coming from the experiences of being part of a family operation, as well as I was one of the people just that you referenced with your friends with a father who had a untimely death. And I think the most, of course, we're going to need professionals. We're going to need accountants. We're going to need tax specialists. We're going to need lawyers. Of course, the rules are different in between Canada and the United States. And in some cases, we might need counselors. But also, the first part of it is just sitting down and seeing if we can create a shared vision. Are we on the same page or not? And because I truly believe that the professionals cannot do an effective, good job without that information. And I know even there was times for us in our journey where, you know, we knew we had to do something, and my parents were so great at initiating and leading it. But, you know, we went to the accountants expecting them to give us the answers, and it's got to be the other way around. You know, we as families in our operations have to try to create that shared vision and figure out a way that we can come together and start talking about that. You know, what do we want life to look like and our business in 5 years? Sometimes families can do that within, you know, they can have those kind of meetings. Some families already have regular meetings, but that's a place to start, is to initiate family meetings. And I think another thing, just segue on what you said before, was that, do you have a contingency plan? Because that emergency one, I mean, you know, people all over are experiencing those kind of situations. And again, even a brief outline and start a conversation. Okay, you know, does everybody know where some of the important information is? And those kind of details, that can be a starting point. Sometimes having a third party neutral to just lead the conversation is helpful. You know, that can be a specific facilitator. Sometimes you might have people within your community or trusted advisors that can help lead the process. But I really think that it begins with having those important conversations, and, you know, about what's important to our business, what do we value, and where do we see it in the future.
Could you just give us a brief outline or a sketch, a framework of some of the typical shared visions that you see people coming up with, or some, you know, I mean, we've talked about how the process of setting these goals on previous episodes, but can you just talk a little bit about what the shared vision might look like to give people an idea that they're on the right track?
One of the things that I'm just going to segue in here is to switch up and mention some of the work of a fellow by the name of Simon Sinek. I'm not sure if you're familiar with him. Mm-hmm. He's the fellow that talks about the art of why. And I think that that's a really good point to start, because in our families, you know, if we can, it's the pieces sometimes when we're talking about the how and the what that we can get into difficulties. But if we start at the pieces about why are we there and what do we value? You know, what's important to us about this operation and working together? So really talking about that kind of values-based piece before we start looking at the how-tos and the whats. Because frankly, as we change to another generation running these operations, the whats and the hows may change.
You mentioned earlier on that one of the barriers to these transition plans is asset value increase or the appreciation of asset value. Are there some good methods that you've seen people put in place to handle that? And I'll just lay out a scenario here where there's one child who is still on the ranch, working on the ranch, and they are participating in the day-to-day operations, and there are maybe one or two children that are removed from the ranch who aren't participating in the day-to-day operations. Is there a way to handle that in a way that is fair, not necessarily equitable, but fair, so that the people who are on the ranch and contributing to it are compensated in a different way than the people who are not on the ranch as with regard to the asset value increase?
Well, I certainly think that as we go forward with younger generations that are going to take over, it's important to talk about values for what sort of formulas might work. So, for example, you know, is it going to be a percentage of equity over time? You know, I've heard of people that do that with the family member that was actively involved. They got a percentage each year of the assets in the ranch or the farm to allow for the perhaps less wages or less draw, depending on what the circumstances is. Certainly an old model that's been used up here a lot is some sort of life insurance policy to look after the non-farming children. But then I also think that, you know, these kids that are coming up are so bright and creative, and we need to look at some new models for working together. So maybe some of the non-active can still own some of the land that, and then it gets rented back, or those, and that can be a vehicle too for parents to draw out of it that, you know, especially if there's particular pieces that maybe aren't integral to the operation, you know. So I think we need to be really creative and ask, you know, for the possibilities, tap into all these different minds of what the pathways could look like.
What about transitioning day-to-day decision-making issues? How are those being handled well, I guess, and what are some processes that people are going through to start to transition day-to-day decision-making?
One of the models that I've seen goes back to the concepts by a fellow by the name of Ernesto Ciroli, and he did some community enterprise development, but he talked about the idea that we have some different legs of the stool. He started out with three. So one is a producer, one is a marketer, and one is finance. I think we could add a fourth one on the people component. But the idea being that, you know, in our operations, it's hard to be skilled at all of those. And certain people are going to have, you know, more competencies in different areas and passions and interests. So using that kind of model of, okay, well, which areas are you going to be involved in or lead as time goes on? And another family that I worked with, they actually made a concerted effort to switch those roles. So the idea then is the upcoming generation actually had experience in the production end, in the finance end, and in the marketing end. So, you know, I think sitting down, you know, in maybe more formal ways with job descriptions and roles and responsibilities, and talking about how that can look if certain areas are taken over by the upcoming generation.
That's good. Are there any tools for helping to develop those job descriptions and responsibilities so that people are on the same page there? Is there any tool that you recommend for that?
I don't specifically have one right off the top of my head, but I'm sure if you just Googled some of those, there'd be some more of those available. You know, with the World Wide Web, there's all kinds of things we can access. Another piece of it to to look at is the three circle model that they talk about in families and business. And so there are three overlapping circles. One is family, one is ownership, and one is business. So there's now all these different spots and starting to look at where people fall into areas of the circle. Maybe it's a grandma that's in the ownership circle and in the family, but she's not in the active day-to-day, you know, non-family employees are in the business, but they don't connect with any of the others. And there's another interesting way that of people to frame what areas they're involved in, and then what responsibilities go along with that. Because certainly, you know, someone who's an employee of the business has different areas that of decision making than somebody who's an owner of some of the assets.
Sure. Yeah, that's good. It's helpful. Is the families and business, is that a resource, a specific resource you're referring to, or just?
Well, no, that's just kind of the field, and there's a number of different people that are working in that one. And the Family Enterprise Institute, I think, in the States is one of them. I think FEI is the acronym. But, and there's a Canadian one, too, Canadian Association of Family Enterprises, I believe it is. So there's lots of work going on in that area. You know, those aren't typically, aren't necessarily ag operations, but of course all the same similarities apply. And talking about different, you know, which generation are we in? I mean, there'll be some where they went from the first generation, G1 they call it, to the next with G2, and then the G3 is where there's now could be a bunch of cousins involved, you know, which even gets more removed and challenging.
A lot of what you're talking about today is predicated on the fact that you've got your business kind of broken up into its different enterprises and you understand the people that are involved. So I think that there's probably some steps that would be helpful to take before sitting down for these conversations and these meetings. Are there some specific training programs that you would recommend people go through to help them get those pieces in place so that they are all, you know, aware of the way that their ranch business is operating?
Well, certainly, you know, some of the training in a more general operational way through holistic management and ranching for profit, those type of training can certainly put the emphasis on that business planning model, which is helpful as well. You know, where you do go into the enterprise analysis and those types of things.
Do you think that is almost a prerequisite for these kind of conversations and things that we're talking about today?
I don't know, but it can sure help, I think. You know, I do certainly believe in the importance of overall strategic business planning. And I guess when you look at it in that way, there's different offshoots of that. And the succession of the transition plan is one of the sub plans in the overall process.
Yep. It just seems to me that if you don't have your business broken up into enterprises, it's really hard to transition one part of it to the decision-making authority to one individual person if you haven't necessarily started to analyze your business as a collection of enterprises rather than just one conglomerate. And I guess that's just kind of the way I was looking at that question.
Yeah. I guess it'll depend on the individuals, you know, and what sort of way they are looking at and the complexity of the operation too.
Sure. Do you have any favorite examples of people who are putting these things into practice and doing it well, and just kind of an example of what people could expect?
Well, you know, I think that for people that are doing it well, one of the key factors is that the majority of the family is on board to proceed. So if they aren't, you know, there's another challenge that needs to be overcome, and particularly the older generation, whether they're actual founders or not, they have to be, they have to have bought into the idea that it's important to lay out a plan of where do we want to go and how are we going to get there? And so then coming together, like I say, with all, sometimes we'll start where we just speak to the individual couples and then bring everybody together in a family meeting, the active and non-active members, and start talking about what this future could and should look like, and develop a five-year plan. And then often there'll need to be somebody that, or there has been somebody that kind of leads the process, because once you get into the details of it, then you do have to involve, of course, the professionals. And sometimes that's even a challenge, you know, finding trusted professionals that both generations can work with.
Can you talk about maintaining family relationships while going through the business transition? You know, I think that a lot of times it's easy for us to get focused on the assets and the responsibilities and forget that really the most important thing is that we're all still friends and family at the end of the day. Are there any things that can help? I mean, is it as simple as we have this shared vision and that keeps us all moving in the same direction, or are there other things that we can do to kind of hedge against the personal feelings getting in the way?
Well, I think that sometimes, you know, we need to be clear about when we're gathering together, is this going to be a business meeting, or is this going to be a family meeting where we can socialize and have fun and enjoy each other? Of course, because there's such a big overlap in the worlds that we work in, you know, it's all kind of one and the same, and we talk business at the family supper on Sunday. And so trying to make sure that there's some emphasis being placed on both models of that, or components, because there will be times, you know, when the family doesn't include everybody involved in the business. So certainly making sure that they have some dialogue with which to speak about things.
So definitely intentionally scheduling your family meetings as family meetings, not just allowing the family business to overtake the gathering of whatever, for whatever reason you're getting together.
Yes.
As a family.
Yes, yes. And, you know, sometimes, again, that'll be a little bit of a hard switch because of the patterns that we've gotten used to. And, you know, but often if there's just one person that will kind of lead the way, then some more will fall into it. And it takes a while. We got to keep practicing at doing it.
Yeah, that's whenever we've had the opportunity to talk about issues related to managing people on the Working Cows podcast, I have been grateful when that kind of idea comes up, that you shouldn't expect to be good at this the first time you do it.
No, certainly. And, you know, the phenomena too, that of it's so easy to see what other operations should be doing. It's not that easy in our own, of course, because of the emotional component. So I think we need to give ourselves some space and time to work on these. But certainly if you can have, it helps to have often a third party, like I say, just neutral to lead the processes. And then, you know, just going back to a previous question where you're asking people that are doing it well, it's important to realize that this is a process. This is not a one-time event. And so we need to keep, you know, revisiting and making sure we're on track. Everybody knows that life changes, and so wills need to be updated and all those kind of things that, you know, maybe things don't work out with siblings working together. And that's something else I often say in my workshops, is that, you know, just because we're related doesn't mean that we will work well together. So that's another thing to think about and look about, that if we're still going to be somehow connected, can there be some more separateness?
Right. And it's, you know, we need to make sure, well, we're always moving towards that 5 years. So if we set a 5-year plan, you're always getting closer to that, and you've got to continue to move that out farther and farther, and take into account the fact that you're progressing and that those things need to be updated. So that's definitely helpful. How about keeping it affordable for the kids that are looking to step into taking over? You know, it's a incredibly capital intensive business that we find ourselves in. And so startup costs are often one of the big barriers. Are there methods or ways that people can structure these plans so that it's reasonable for the person who's looking to take over?
Well, certainly, you know, one of the things that I've heard about recently is some lease agreements. There was another family that I had worked with that had set up a couple of different companies, and it doesn't always have to be this complicated, but a bunch of the assets were in the company that the parents owned, and so the younger generation company leased, or you know, or sometimes they would will have traded work or whatever to use that amount of equipment, or the renting the land or the grazing fee for the land, whatever the case may be. But again, the best way to ensure that some of those work is to make sure we have some conversations about it and the expectations that go along with it, you know, so that those are clear that, you know, a younger generation can use for a fee, whatever that turns out to be, but make sure that that's clear about what the fee is, you know. So again, doing it in a really, emphasis on the business side of it approach.
Can you talk about the importance of good record keeping to this process? Is that seems to be a pretty important piece to me, but maybe I'm overstating it.
No, you're absolutely not. And even the idea of contracts, and I know that, you know, within family, it seems like that isn't always necessary, but, you know, we certainly with our outside business people that we look at or work with, talk about having contracts, and I know full well that you can't cover everything, but you can cover a lot of bases. And I think when you have that document that's written down and everybody can look at it and sign it, you know, it's like, okay, this is clear how it's going to be set out. And those can be helpful in the event of the tragedies too, you know, like, well, what kind of agreement did we have, you know? And, there's many operations where a lot of those details are inside of one person's head. And, you know, for continuity and smooth transition, they need to be on paper or recorded in some way.
Absolutely. You know, I've had where my wife and I are in a transition from one job to another and moving, and our kids as well are coming along with this. But I've had some conversations with potential landlords. And I know that in a lot of Western cultures, ranching cultures, that somebody that you would be renting or leasing from tends to kind of figure in some of your labor as part of payment for whatever it is you're renting or leasing from them. And I, you know, just to keep myself from getting taken advantage of, my plan is to have those things in writing. This is the number of days per month or per week that you can expect to have my services in exchange for this much of my rent being covered. And so I think some of that's just a year and a half now of picking people's brains like yours on this podcast have changed the way I think about how to handle relationships. And I know it might seem weird to some people, but having it in writing is a protection for everybody involved.
Oh, for sure. For sure. And that makes me think of some of the more non-traditional arrangements that I've worked with, where the ownership of the operation was going to stay within the family, but management was definitely going outside of it. I think you're probably more, that's more a familiar case in the United States than it is in Canada. But truly, these two young couples that are taking over different components of managing the ranch, they really are not interested in land ownership. They have a production model that they're excited about, and it doesn't involve actually owning the land. So, you know, looking at some of those more non-traditional ways, I think that we can glean some ideas from those as well. And certainly, you know, what you're talking about, Clay, is setting up some parameters ahead of time is so much easier than trying to go back, you know, than trying to figure out somebody that's been in working on the farm for 15 years, you know, but we're going to school for part of the time. And I mean, those, it's really convoluted when you try to look back. So any time that we can lay some more groundwork to move forward, I think that's a good idea.
Yeah. And so you're talking about a situation where there is a family that maintains ownership, maybe with even a board of directors, and then they would hire in an outside manager to come in who would live on the place and maintain the cow herd and the fences and all those things. Is that becoming more common, do you think, or is it something that you would like to see more of in the ranching industry?
Well, again, I think it's more prevalent down there than it is up here. And in this case, the enterprises, one is a cattle enterprise and one is actually a vegetable enterprise because they have the fortune of being quite close to a market. So they have operating agreements, but it's not in the way that you're talking about where a manager was hired to look after things. And there isn't necessarily a board of directors involved in this one. But these three couples, the founders and the two young people that are managing the operation, we came together and went through a process just the same as we would have if they were all family, you know, creating that shared vision and what were the values that were important to everybody as they continued on. And some kind of evaluation feedback method, because we know it's never going to go according to the initial plan. So we need to have some parameters set up where we're revisiting that. And so we're specifically getting together to say, how is this going? You know, what have been? Do a SWOT analysis. I'm kind of a big fan of those these days. You know, what are strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats? That doesn't just have to be on a big strategic planning level, that can be more focused on particular situations.
Sure. What about documented individual performance reviews? Is that something that you would recommend just for another piece of paper that kind of proves that this person has been living up to the expectations of those people who are kind of checking in on them?
Yeah, for sure. I don't know, you know, again, depending on the situation, how formal it needs to be, but some sort of evaluation process to, you know, and it can be, it should be a shared one too, you know, both sides giving input onto how are things going and what could we do to overall improve the situation. And again, having a procedure in place that happens regularly.
This is obviously a huge issue and probably should have its own podcast devoted to it. And I think it would be an interesting one that would be, you know, well received. But are there any other issues that you wanted to make sure we covered today?
No, I think that covers the most of it. You know, the importance of, like I said, from the get-go, the bringing the, setting the stage for the family to come together and really, creating that shared vision and seeing what it can look like. And that's a time that, you know, if people aren't always on the same page, then perhaps we can come up with different strategies instead of always including everybody in the same model as come forward.
Any resources? I'm not sure what the show notes page for today is going to be, but I will say it in the intro and the outro. Any resources that you would like me to include on a show notes page?
I don't know. You know, I should look up, Clay, the actual, those family enterprise organizations. And then, you know, of course, we've talked about holistic management and ranching for profit. So I'll put that on a list and I'll just send out some pieces of resources.
Okay. I appreciate that. And we'll get that done. So
okay.
Kelly, thank you for your time today.
Okay, excellent. Thanks a lot. It's been enjoyable. Bye.
Well, I got another episode to get out to you sometime, probably this week yet, with John Locke of the Locke Division of the J.D. Hudgens Seed Stock, purveyors of Brahman cattle specifically. Fits really nicely with this. Also, J.D. Hudgens has their bull sale coming up here later on in April, and I just wanted to get that out to get some of the benefits of the Boss Indicus bloodlines and what they can do for even commercial Angus herds and other non-Boss Indicus herds. One more reminder, today on the show notes page at workingcows.net/83, there will be a link to that webinar that we've got coming up with Beef Chain. If you haven't listened to that Beef Chain episode, I'd encourage you to go back and listen to it. There's some huge benefits and huge potential use cases for this that I'm really, really excited about. And so check out the workingcows.net/83. Show notes page. There's a link to the webinar with Beef Chain there, a Facebook link. I'm apparently too much of a millennial to figure out how to link to a a Google Calendar event in a way that everybody can access it with one click. So Facebook it is, I guess. And if you don't have Facebook, I can send you an invite personally. Just reach out to me at workingcows.net/contact, and I will get you that invite sent out personally. So also, I wanted to say a huge thank you to everybody who voted and shared in the My Roadcast competition. There was some fellow from the Philippines who had about 12 times as many votes as I do, but I really appreciate you guys taking the time to jump in there and help me out on that. It was very inspiring to see all the clicks and the link and people sharing it and all that stuff. So thank you guys so much. It was a great experience for me, and I look forward to just continuing to build this community. You guys are awesome, and you guys have done so much to bless me, including this new boom arm that I am using now to hold my microphone that someone sent to me off my Amazon wish list. So thank you guys so much, and really appreciate all that you did in the My Roadcast competition. Look forward to another episode this week, and really excited to get that out to you yet this week.
We invite you to visit workingcows.net to subscribe to the show via iTunes or Stitcher. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, resources from our guests, and the industry leaders who have influenced them. For more ideas on putting your cows to work for you in a more profitable way, tune in next week.